The following presentation was recorded at the 1999 Teachers Workshop at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
It's exciting to see schools begin to do some of the things that we want to talk about today. Plan ahead. Help some of these things happen so they don't find themselves in a jam. And we want to talk about identifying potential teachers, calling teachers, and then equipping teachers. And so I'm just going to ask some questions here. We begin under the heading of identifying potential teachers. Melvin, what characteristics should you look for in a potential teacher?
Oh, I need a cup of coffee to make this professional. Who do I talk to? You again.
Go ahead and talk to them.
Okay.
we need some nice easy chairs and a table up here and some coffee.
Yes, that's what I need here. What characteristics should you look for in a potential teacher? I think that's a good question. And in jotting down a few answers, I tried to stay away from the pie in the sky, by and by answers, they ought to be spiritual and things like that, which I think is all true.
Mm-hmm.
So when I give you the ones that I've listed here, it's not that I'm neglecting those. Mm-hmm. I think that's an assumption, okay, when we come to hiring teachers. Number one that I have down is personal poise. I'm just thinking that if I'm interviewing a prospective teacher, I want to know how they handle themselves. I want to know if they'll look me directly in the eye, if they'll want to be bright and open in the discussion, because I think that reflects on their spirituality and it reflects on their character. My experience has been that if a person has something lurking in their past or some hidden secrets that you don't really want in this school anyway, you might discover that in the initial interview, if you're skilled at kind of looking and thinking and observing and asking questions that demonstrate or help to draw out of them their personal voice, or what I'm calling personal voice. I look for that. It's kind of being at rest with people and in discussions. These are not necessarily in order. I just put them down on my paper. I look to see if they have a sense of communication. Because what is teaching after all? It's having a certain amount of information, being able to communicate it to a student. And my assumption would be if they could not communicate well with me while I was doing an interview, they're probably going to do poorly in the classroom as well. Thirdly, and perhaps the one that is most important, I try to find out if they love children. Do they really love children? Now, I say this because, again, we probably would say that, well, all Christians should love children. But on a typical day, even here at Faith Builders, you walk out here during the lunch hour and there will be some young ladies just love to pick up the babies and hold them and talk to the children or read a story to them or something like that. They kind of have a special love for children. And that's what I'm talking about, not just the average I like children, but that magnetic attraction, I just like to be with children, I love them. Or if you're thinking teenagers, older students, the same thing. Has the person already demonstrated a clear love for young men and young ladies and went into their lives? I'd want to know that. Fourthly, I don't know if you'll like this or not, but I want to know if they're intelligent. It may sound funny to you, but you might as well not ignore something that's very true. Teachers teach. They deal with subjects. And the fact of the matter is, if they don't have the brain power, and I'm not exalting brain power now, I'm just simply saying, just like if I don't have the strength in my arm to pound a nail, I might as well not be a carpenter. Likewise, I'd want some kind of evidence that I'm really talking to an intelligent person. I don't mean super intelligent. I mean, they're skilled. They can read, they can learn, and they can then communicate what they've learned to the person. We could go on with more, but I just list those four: personal poise, a sense of communication, a lover of children, and the intelligence that a teacher needs to have. To do their job.
I think those are good. And I just have a few things jotted down as well. And Melvin mentioned the spiritual. I like the verse in 2 Timothy 2 that says that you need to find faithful men who can also teach. And so I think faithfulness is what you're referring to there. Something else I like to check into is what kind of relationships this person has with other people. That's a very clear indicator. If they're kind of a loner and people don't really hold them in high regard, don't have just a basic respect for them, I can just about guarantee they're not going to do well in the classroom. Their students aren't going to have a lot of respect and regard for them as well. Something else I like to look for is a positive attitude, just a can-do approach to things. Rather than apologizing, always you're saying, well, I'm not sure I can do that. I know we want to be humble and all those things, and yet it needs to come to a point where teachers say, yes, I think I can do that, and be positive about it. Good work ethic. Again, how do you find these things out? Well, if they're from your own community, you can do your homework a little bit. You can ask for some references. Someone has said, too, that if you require references, you can... A lot of times, someone fills out a reference, they may be a good friend of the person, or they may not try to deceive you at all, but we'll give you one perspective on that person. When you call the reference, ask them, is there someone else I could talk to that would know about this person as well? And often that second call may be one that might give you even a more accurate, complete picture. That's something you might want to consider. Okay.
May I just dump something extra in here? A question I ask myself sometimes, would I want my son to grow up to be like this person? Would I want my daughter to grow up to be a young lady like this person?
Excellent.
And if I would definitely answer no, don't harm. Because they are models. I'd add that in for whatever it's worth.
Good. Okay, well, what ages should teachers be? How old should they be?
Okay. Two words came to mind when I saw this question. The words maturity and preparation. And I know I'm skirting the issue of saying 18, 19, 20, 21, or 22, but I skirt that issue for the same reason that whether we're selecting a minister or whatever it may be, a maturity certainly comes into this. And what kind of preparation has there been? However, I will give an age on it, because it seems to me as though there's at least an average in here somewhere that exists. If you're talking high school, 18 years old is too young. Just simply because of the peer orientation of those people. One of the finest students I ever had came back and taught school at our school when he was 19, and he did okay. But a couple of the students said, we just can hardly get used to him being behind the desk and telling us what to do. When just last year we were hiding his books and we were doing this and doing that, he was kind of a scholarly type of person, and took jokes really well. And they were a little too close to the same age. Okay, and he was an exceptionally mature person, but it still was too close. Okay.
Would you make a difference if they're from a different setting, different youth group, different...
That helps some. That helps some, it sure does. This gentleman happened to be from our community and from our youth group, and magnify the problem. If you want a good solid age, I think 20 is a great age to be thinking about. I don't think a teacher has to be that old. We had teachers who taught younger and did well, especially with the younger classes. But I wouldn't want to be hiring an 18-year-old girl to teach the first and second grade unless I knew that she was really mature for her age. And also if I knew that she had the necessary preparation to be sure that she would be able to teach them how to read well and care for them the way they should be cared for. I would be very, very careful not to be negative toward the very fine young ladies and young men who have taught in our schools and done well. But if you're asking ideally, I'm just saying there ought to be a little distance between the days in which they graduate and when they begin to teach. maybe 2 years, something like that. My son just got home from Poland. He has some interest in teaching. I told him, if I were you, I would not teach right after high school. I'll go to Poland. I'll do some work over there. I'll pick up a trade with your hands. And so he's done some construction work. He still isn't sure that he wants to teach school. But my point is, there just seems to be something in those years that, for a young man who's wanting to teach high school, just got to be a little distance where they pick up some experience and learn a skill or a trade. It's an opinion of mine.
Mm-hmm. The year before I began teaching, I spoke at the high school commencement at our school, and the senior gal there who gave one of the testimonies, did an outstanding job. And I could tell, listening to her now, there's a fine person and a sharp person. And she went back into the school as a teacher at first, second grade, 2 years later. And was quite young. I think she graduated early, so she would only been 19, I think, when she started teaching first, second grade. But was there for 6 years, took off a year, was teaching there again this year. Now been, 7 or 8 years that she's been teaching, and has just done an outstanding job. And again, it's clearly something that set her apart from those people. I would just agree with what you shared there. Okay, another question would be, when is a man or a woman preferable? When do you decide? How do you decide?
Now, I'm probably going to be just a little bit radical here about this. I'll start out with the radical thing, then I'll get more normative. I'm not so sure that a 50 or 60 year old man would not do very well at teaching first and second grade. That's the radical side. Children, my experience in school teaching is children have always responded very well, all ages, to outstanding men, both the boys and the girls. You will typically have less trouble with an outstanding man and relationally than you will with a woman who is teaching, let's say, 5th and 6th grade or 7th and 8th grade, where boys at that particular age particularly I'll say it real bluntly, a 5th and 6th grade girl will get a crush on a very outstanding teacher, male teacher, much quicker than will a 5th and 6th grade boy get a crush on the 21-year-old girl who is teaching that class. I don't know how to explain all of that, but it seems to be that way. I'm arguing a little bit for male teachers here. I'm not saying female teachers are not good. In fact, you all know that after I get done saying the radical side of it, there's something very, very good about that feminine presence in the life of a first and second grade teacher, third and fourth grade teacher, fifth and sixth grade teacher. I prefer myself to see male teachers seventh grade and on. Okay, now it's arguable a couple of different ways there. I mean, I'm not at all. We had before I taught at Anchor School, there was a young lady from up in Big Valley, but some of you probably know her, Agnes King. She's married now to. I don't mind giving her name because she did such a very, very good job. She came in and taught the whole high school, I think, for 2 or 3 years, something like that, and did very, very, very well. I don't know if she really had their respect, but she did okay. This is a hard question to answer, I think. You have to know your community. You have to know your grade situation. The structure of boys versus girls in the classroom and so on. I'd add to it, though, that I can see some real advantage to a young lady teaching, seventh or 12th grade girls, let's say in Bible or in some level of where there are feminine issues that ought to be discussed, okay, that would not do well at all for a man to be discussing. Most of our schools did not have enough male presence, I'll just say it that way. Okay. without doing, and I don't want to do injury to the great part that the young ladies and the girls, the feminine side that comes into our schools. I have no doubt that if it were all men, it would not work very well. So that's why I'm kind of slanting a little bit and arguing a little bit on the side of the male presence in the schools. So there was something else I was going to say about that. Oh, yeah, I know what it was. I do want, especially want to say to the older men. Now I'm 43, okay. But there is a tremendous blessing of an older, gray-haired man in a school that provides some kind of stability and respect that is just hard to gain any other way. Age naturally brings respect. I have discovered that even in the world. You find an older person with gray hair, and most people will give that respect. And listen, it surprises me that we are not more diligent on this in recruiting or encouraging men who are 40, 45, 50, 55, 60 years old. Who can still, have a lot of vigor and all that. Why we don't get them into the classrooms and teach if they have that skill, they're apt to teach. Because of the natural respect and the tendency of helping to bring order to a bad situation sometimes, it just not that flows from that type of person. I haven't said very much concrete, I know, but that's about what I need to say about it.
Oh, that's very good. I would agree with what you shared there. In fact, I've told the few men that I've talked to that say, I'd really like to teach in fifth grade. That's really what I'd like to teach. And I said, well, that'd be great. I hope you're around when my son's in fifth grade. I'd like to see that. Same time, I just want to balance that by saying that I've seen some ladies do an outstanding job with older grades. So sometimes we tend to limit the ladies and don't provide those opportunities. And then when we need ladies who are capable, we don't have them because we haven't developed them. That's my only concern there, that we need to work just as hard in developing outstanding women as we do outstanding men, because there are places for them.
Again, I would just add a comment if I could.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's discussion about where ladies fit into the teaching profession, as to whether sometimes there's some theological discussion or even belong there, teaching in a certain level. I don't really have a strong feeling about that, but I just want to share one testimony. I went to public school, and it was not with us back in the 70s, the rough time, the early 70s. And I had a teacher who stood about this tall. Okay, she was a lady. Must have been in her 50s, 55, 60, Demasigas. I cannot remember her name anymore. But I remember her as clearly as could be, because they had a classroom of 30 boys. I went to a vocational technical school, and so when we came back to school, it was 30 of us. Tough class to handle. And that lady was so poised. I mean, we loved her dearly. She taught American history, and she'd stand up there just as prim and proper as could be. And there wasn't a person in the classroom who dared to speak. How could you? It's kind of like that. There was a very powerful feminine presence from her that boys, even boys, these were not Mennonite boys, now mind you, it's just a whole bunch of boys from Chambersburg, okay? They all sat up and listened nicely. I have never known quite what to make of that. That was good. it felt good to me.
Okay, well, how can we avoid hiring teachers that will be a disaster? We've probably seen that happen, where you hire someone and by November it's becoming clear this is not good, and by February you're wishing, like everything, it was May, How can we avoid that?
Big part of going to school is homework, and I think that's my first comment. Do your homework. Now, I'm not prepared to just enumerate what that homework is, but when you're in desperate straits, that's not time just to hire the first person who comes along. You have not done your homework, I'm sure, if that's the case. I'm going to speak ideally now. You could attempt to hire a teacher that has already been successful somewhere. They've been teaching 3, 4, 5 years. and they're looking for another job someplace else. Now, I know that's a rarity. They're very rare. If you find a successful teacher somewhere, they're tight right there. But I'm just saying that ideally that's certainly one way to do this. And I have the third thing I have is perhaps more attention should be given to the development of a teacher who comes into your community. Now, it seemed to me that you'd have to be very unwise to hire somebody from the community who is going to be a disaster, because you ought to know them well enough to know whether they're going to be able to handle this or not. Probably most of the disastrous situations come up when they're hired outside of the community. I'll tell you the one to look for. In my experience of teaching, the one that causes a disaster the most often is a young lady from another community who is inordinately looking for a boyfriend. That will cause you more trouble than you want. You want to check that issue. In particular, if you're hiring outside of your community and you don't know the person. How is this person doing in terms of their relationship to boys, or the other way around, if they're single? But what I'm thinking about here is, okay, so you do hire a teacher outside of the community and they come into your community. Now, what I want to know, or what I'd like for us to think about, is what do we do with them? Okay, do we just put them in the classroom? We don't evaluate. We don't do anything. The first week goes by, everything seems fine. Second week does, third week goes by, fourth week, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the year, we find out there's trouble. I think we should have just been evaluating all along. Okay, we should have been right on top of that and actually have kind of a plan in place. This is what, at the end of 2 weeks, we're going to do so and so. We're going to sit down, the principal will sit down with this teacher and see how things are going and so forth and so on. At the end of 4 weeks, we're going to do this or whatever. I haven't thought that through real thoroughly, but it seems to me that too often, especially the teacher outside the community, just comes in and they're left kind of coast in the school. And then problems develop and maybe could have been nipped in the bud a lot earlier if we had been thinking about working with this newcomer coming into the community and just taking things as they come rather than butting them all of a sudden become a great big problem. I think it goes without saying that you probably should not attract teachers with high pay. I doubt that's a problem in your communities, but those are just some things I'd share.
Okay, well, I know we had a teacher at home one year who did come from outside the community, although I think we were somewhat acquainted with her. And what happened is an older single lady, and she had had a difficult life in many ways. And then later on had decided to go back to school and got her degree in teaching, was teaching part-time. I'd really wanted to teach public school. But was not able to find a job in public school. And right there should have been one red flag to it. But we talked her different times, checked the number of references, felt that she was going to do okay, felt like she was aware of the areas where she was going to need to work to do well. And eventually what happened there respect eroded. For one thing, again, you could point to legitimate reasons why she was the way she was. In other words, there were some hurts there, some needs there that just hadn't been overcome completely. And so it was extremely unfortunate because she left at the end of that first year, and that was her only year there, very hurt by the whole ordeal. Just confirmed again to her that she didn't quite have what it took to teach and do well with people. And so a couple things that happened there, and I'm not blaming, I wasn't the principal at that time. This is after I left. But, and I'm not saying I would have done any better. Don't hear me being critical at all, but what is easy to do in those situations is that the principal's busy. It's like you're saying. He's not maintaining the relationship. He's not equipping this person. He's not quick to say, okay, here's what we're going to work on. He waited until November, okay, to really get involved. Okay, well, it was too late, for one thing. And I really think, I was involved in the interviewing process there, and he was as well. We were both involved, the board was involved. I really think that if we'd have known everything and we would have all worked a little harder, I think she could have done all right. But it would have required some intense work, and work that you wouldn't have felt like you had time for, you wished you wouldn't have had to do it. So, yeah, I think, too, I just affirm what you said, that being very important to ask the hard questions, take those little signs. I talked to another principal who said they ignored, someone commented that the teacher they were interviewing when they had him over for an evening meal didn't say a single word to any of their children, didn't say a word, and they ignored that cue. And they said that was a huge clue, I should call it, not a cue, but a clue. Ended up being, yeah, he had no relational abilities with students. And so students just hated the guy. And so I just underscore what you said there. Okay. Let's go down to the next heading, calling teachers. What will attract teachers to a particular position or school?
Success is always attractive. And what I mean by that is where a school is running successfully, people are attracted to that school. And I would add to that a statement I make a lot of times, and that is every school needs to have at least one outstanding teacher. Now, why do I say that? Well, it is interesting that a young man growing up in our community back home, when John Martin was teaching there back in the 70s, they aspired to be teachers, okay, because there was an outstanding teacher there, and they wanted to teach alongside that person, okay? This normally has to be a long-term male teacher, okay? Now, it may be female, but oftentimes a long-term male teacher, you will find your school being able to attract some pretty fine young men with some talent if there is an outstanding teacher there that those young men really kind of down their hearts they want to learn from, I think is my point. So I'm saying, who is going to want to walk into a school and be a school teacher somewhere where there's been nothing but chaos the year before? It's been nothing but trouble. Well, nobody's going to want to do that. Somebody may feel called to. Nobody's going to want to. However, just as a school teacher, as I've looked over these schools, I can think of schools that I'd love to teach there. They've done well. The schools have done well over the years, and there are some good teachers there, and I'd love just to be peers with them, you know, and teaching in the classroom. I'm just trying to be very practical here without going into a whole pile of theoretical stuff. But, I mean, if you have a successful school, people will come. You'll have teachers, I think, that may want to teach there. You have outstanding people there, they naturally attract other people. And if you don't have those two, well, you're kind of back to base level where you're looking for teachers, and you're trying to talk them into teaching at your school. I do want to say something about funding here. There isn't a male teacher here that would not say this. I know male teachers who would like to continue teaching, or they have been teaching, they quit teaching, they said they just could not make it on the amount of money they were receiving. Now, I'm not here to get on school boards and tell you that, oh, you got to do this, you got to do that, and you have to know your community and the funds available and all of that. But you probably will not keep in your school, or nor attract outstanding teachers who have this longevity thing. They're going to be there a long time. And they're going to work hard. And they're going to do well unless you pay them enough so they can do that. And I just say that kindly, but that's just about the way it is. I hope that was practical enough.
You know, at our school back home, school been in existence for, it's over 30 years now, but some additions been put on, and you know, you can say, well, it's not, money is not what attracts, and yet there was a combination of things that happened. I just felt very fortunate to be in that community and be a part of it. One was that it was a very attractive school. It wasn't extravagant. In fact, part of it was a pole structure. But it was still attractively done. There was some brick on the front, and there was some really nice landscaping done. One of the fellows in the community, one of the churches, knew a fair amount about landscaping, did a really nice, just a professional class job of landscaping, donated it to the school. And, you know, I never was ashamed to drive up to that building and say, this is where I teach. It felt very good. Teachers, inevitably, that came to visit said, wow, you have a really nice school. Community people like fire chiefs and inspectors and the insurance people would come in and say, you know, you have a nice school. You have a nice facility here. It's clean. It's attractive. And there's something about walking into a school that a prospective teacher is just going to say, you know, this is nice. And something else that had developed was not always the case, and it was true before I got there, that we developed a reputation of a very supportive parent body. Teachers knew that if they went there, they would they'd like to have teachers. Do you have anything to add to that, Melvin?
Well,
beginning to look for teachers.
That just assumes, again, that you're going to have your present teachers give some kind of answer early on. When I said early on, at Anchor, there was just always kind of standard. I could expect at Thanksgiving board chairman to stop by and ask, what do you plan to do next year? Sometimes I was ready with my answer. And he'd say, I don't want you to answer yet. I want your answer by Christmas. So he'd come and ask at Thanksgiving, and then he'd say, I want your answer by Christmas so we know what we need to do. Now I know there are times when that can't be done. But if you just kind of standardize that in your school, this is when you ask the teachers, if you plan to ask them back, you ask them now. And this is when you want an answer from them. And if they have a good reason why they can't give an answer, then, well, obviously that should be considered. But other than that, you want them to give an answer. Do it after Christmas vacation. Maybe they'll feel better at that time.
At our school, we would always have a formal evaluation of the teacher in November by the principal or maybe a board member. And then the principal was responsible to come December, that first Monday in December, that board meeting, and make a recommendation to the board about hiring the next teachers. And the board chairman then would make his rounds before Christmas vacation, like Melvin was saying. And then we'd ask him, you know, we'd like to have an answer soon after the first of the year. And here's the thing about that. I never made more than 1 year commitment at a time, but I knew when I started teaching, I knew that I was going to probably be there, you know, unless something really went wrong. I was going to be there for at least 5 years. Okay? So, it was good for me to go through that process, but I didn't agonize through that process every year. I knew I was going to be there the next year. Well, some of our teachers said, wow, this every year, you know, trying to decide my life's calling every year, you know, it's just too much. And that's why I encouraged them, and I think boards would do well to encourage people you hire. Now, look, we're signing on for a year, but you know, you may know in your heart that, as far as you know, you're going to be here for a while. And we don't think you should have to agonize your decision every year. But what that does, it enables this. It keeps the accountability at a higher level, I think, if you do a yearly contract. And I think in most situations that's a positive. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what do you do if you're desperate? I know we said we don't want to get desperate. Let's say you are. What do you do?
We've done this before. Back at Anchor, what you do is you list 20 people who are possibilities, both in the community and outside of the community, and you write up a formal letter of not appeal. Proposal. Because it sounds like an appeal, and it feels like one too, actually, when you're in those shoes. And you enumerate just as well as you can. I'm a mathematician. This turns out to be statistical. If you send out enough of them, I think sometimes what happens, that my point here is, what happens too often is, okay, there's an announcement made over the pulpit, there's an announcement made somewhere else, there's an announcement made over here. People think differently when they get in the mail a letter, okay, that says, this is from the school board, and we are asking you to consider this position at our school, signed by the board chairman or whatever. I'll be calling you in 1 week, you know, or something like that. That's different than just an announcement over the pulpit. Because if there is somebody back there who is thinking to themselves that they might want to teach, just think what this feels like to a person who's untried, untested. They're going to walk up and say, I'd like to teach. They're not going to do that. Okay, but if you have perceived that maybe this person would make a teacher, you're desperate. Now, you can't go through these ideal things. You already went through those, and you're done for. Well, get your pencil and paper out and get up a nice formal invitation, proposal, to about 20 people that you can think of. And don't take anything for granted. Okay? And send those to them and get a response. I have found that to actually work pretty well.
Something else about making that announcement up front, it makes it sound desperate.
Yeah.
It makes it sound like, what are they doing wrong? I'm not going to go there. You know. And so it's important to do that in a professional manner there. Okay. Just a comment on that as well. I've talked to board chairmen in desperate situations, and they will say, in fact, I've been called, you know, a time or so, and they'll say, well, you need to pray about it. We're not asking you to come at any cost. We don't want you if God doesn't want you here. But you pray about it. And they said, you know, we have two people that would teach, but we don't think they're the right people, and we're waiting for the right person. You know, I don't know what all the dynamics are about why they're in that desperate situation. Maybe some things aren't quite working right. However, I do respect their commitment to finding the right person. They're not just finding a warm body. It's like that, you've seen the cartoon where the lady's being interviewed by the personnel director, and he says, well, we're looking for someone with a PhD in education and 15 years experience, but we'll hire somebody with a van, you know. Sunday school teacher, you know. Well, you don't want to get in that situation. Okay. How can you encourage long-term commitment? That's something that I wanted to ask this morning in the one workshop, how many people have been teaching for more than 2 or 3 years that were in that group upstairs, and how many plan to be teaching in 10 years. I'm guessing very few would have been planning to teach. What do we do to encourage long-term commitment?
I would say number one, what you want to do is you want to make teaching a honored and respected position in your community. I don't mind telling you this. I don't think I'm doing offense to my home community, but when I was 20 years old, I was asked to teach. I was married at that time, and my wife said, no way. One reason. Well, I didn't want to either. One reason. Things were not going well. School teaching was viewed very negatively in the community. I'm not saying that was wholly on my part to be thinking, no. But the fact of the matter is, the raw facts are, if it's honored and respected in the community, then you're more likely to be able to attract somebody to that profession long term. Nobody wants to work in a community or anything for long term if everybody thinks it's less than a job. And I might just say this for whatever it's worth. Don't ever say that to a teacher. When are you going to get a real job? Yeah. Now, some of us have been in it for a while. We just smile, you know, and we say, well, hey, I'll exchange. Why don't you do my job and I'll do yours? But it doesn't help a young man who is thinking about he might teach long term to have people kind of just, even jokingly, it bothers me a little bit when they jokingly kind of let on that, yeah, you know, hey, you're doing this because you could hardly do anything else. That doesn't help one bit in this. And of course, again, I'll come back to finances. If there's at least something built into it, I'll give you a little idea that might work for you. If you can say, look, we'll hire you at X amount of dollars, and if you stay for 5 years, God willing, and all things being equal, we'll increase your pay this amount. Let them know what you're going to do. Don't let them just hang. Okay, if they knew that you were going to increase at $100 per month per year, let's say, well, it doesn't take too long for them to figure out, well, if I stay here 10 years, this is the amount of money I would be making. That feels a lot better to a young man who's looking at something long-term than if he's, I mean, the history of the school has been, you know, that they keep you right at starvation level. And he doesn't see that there's any change in you. If he at least sees a plan, I could expect my wages to go from here to here in 5 years if I demonstrate that I really am long-term teacher material. That feels better. try that, see if it doesn't work.
Yeah, I would just reiterate what you said there about a strong program. One of the things we did, and this was in places, nothing I had done, but our school had a salary schedule, and so every year that base salary was evaluated. Is that adequate? And it often was increased. Now, I know I come from a community that probably has more financial capability than some. And so I think we were very fortunate. We were able to pay a good wage. And I think, I remember one time Paradise Mennonite put out a survey to find out what schools are paying their administrators. How many remember that survey? Can't hear you. I think I remember seeing the results. I think it came back. I think my salary was the highest on that span. And again, I think just a comment on that, salary is selling the bottom line to a person who really wants to teach. It wasn't for me. I didn't have to make a lot of money. So as important as money is, it's probably not the bottom line. I think you need to remember that. I think the person just wants to be able to be responsible with his family. I think that's probably the bottom line. Mm-hmm. But again, just having a strong program and helping people see that it's feasible. We had a teacher as well who taught for 8 years, decided she wanted to go back to school. Was a very good teacher. She went back to college. Was a beachy lady. And she went back to school. And when she was out of school 4 years later, asked if, you know, at that time we had an opening, and we asked if she'd be willing to teach. And I was just amazed at how the board said, well, we're going to pay her what she's worth. Okay. And not that education ranked that high, but the schedule had allowed for it. And so they said, well, we're going to pay her. And so they paid a single gal. I think they also said, look, we know she's getting into middle age. She needs to think ahead. Her parents are getting older. We can't expect her parents to provide for her the rest of her life. And so they paid her a very nice wage, and she's got increases all along. And have just done an outstanding job of supporting her. So all those things make a difference. And you have to do what you're able to do. Again, I think it comes to how much people are really behind the program. And what you said about hiring someone that you would want your son or daughter to emulate, I'm always amazed that people want to say it's not that big, not that important, but they're willing to put their children under that person 6 to 8 hours a day. I always wonder, do they not love their children or what? I could never quite figure that out. I think it's important to hold that in front of your parents as well. Okay, well, under equipping teachers, we have a few minutes left here. What type of equipping should be done prior to employment?
As much as possible. That doesn't answer what type. That tells you how much.
I just wrote down FB.
Yeah, I should just write FB.
Faith building.
I would say in most of our circumstances, the kind of equipping that should be done is to give them some exposure to other teachers. That can be done in various ways. You have CMTI, you have Faith Builders, you have other places where teachers get together and they talk about what teaching is about. Send them to those kinds of places. That, I think, would be perhaps one of the more important things to do. A second thing that you can do is give them a chance to teach alongside an experienced teacher. Okay, now I'm especially talking about the girl that you want to hire, who is, you've got your eye on her, you think she's a good young lady and she may do well at this. She gets out of high school, see if you can't get her to be a helper for a year or so in the classroom. That's terrific. That's actually what we do here, you know. We just pep it up and add to it some and try to give it some more academic breadth. But that's really our idea here, is to get the inexperienced teacher, get them in alongside a good teacher, and let them feel how this is, and give them opportunity there, and then put them into the classroom. I really stand pretty opposed to just pulling somebody off of wherever they're at and putting them through the door and closing the door and saying sink or swim, one of the two. I think we have to have more preparation than that if we expect to have successful schools. And of course, if opportunity is there, I'm not at all opposed.
And that was just understood. If you were a first-year teacher, you needed to go and spend a week there at their one-week teacher seminar. And they learned a lot about curriculum, saw it being taught, saw it modeled, and they could go as often as they wanted. The board said, as many years as you want to go down there, we'll send you down there, all expenses paid. So that was very helpful. Again, teacher seminars, we encouraged, in fact, we made time for those. And other principals have done different things, schools and different things. If you can find somebody in your school who is willing to put some time into this and develop, get a few books that every teacher needs to read, some of those things that can be covered ahead of time can be very beneficial. All right. I think this covers the bulk of what we have here.
Mm-hmm.
And we've covered some of these things on equipping teachers, on calling them and identifying. I want to just make a few summary comments here as we think about this. If you talk to teachers very often, you ask them, how did you decide to teach? And of course, there's a number of teachers around here, and I've been asking in preparation for this topic, I've been asking teachers, so how were you identified? How were you called? How have you been equipped? And it was interesting to notice some teachers felt like they had been corralled at an early age, said, we've got to have you. In desperate situations, we've got to have you come in a hurry, ill-equipped. And I've seen good people turned away from teaching in that way. Others said, you know, my grandma always asked me, so are you going to be a teacher like your dad and your uncle? And, you know, they said, yeah, they grew up just assuming that they would teach. And that was provided. They had opportunities then as they got older to practice that. So I would just reinforce the idea that the more we can encourage people, the more we can see someone who has potential and giftedness in those areas, the better we will do in finding good teachers and not getting in those disastrous situations that we were talking about. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you. And there'll be some photocopies up here in about 15 minutes or so. Next session will be in here as well, evaluating the school. Okay, thank you.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit ChristianLearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the DocForLearning.org.